Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. And with me today is, and I'm going to say this wrong, I know I'm going to mess this up, but Falco Canine Academy. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's perfect. All right, here, get a little closer to that for me. Sorry. And say your last name for me.
It's Andy Falco Jimenez.
Yep. I would have gone Jimenez.
Well, most of my family says Jimenez. But I don't want to get in a whole discussion because it'll upset somebody.
I feel like there's a lot of redneck people then in your family. Is that what I'm picking up?
My dad was in World War II, and I think back then in those days, it was much easier just to say Jimenez, and he's never changed.
It sounds like something my grandfather would say, just, you know, that boy Jimenez. Here's why I'm excited to talk to you, because you have your own company. Like I said, it's Falco Canine Academy, where you train dogs.
Correct.
And you train, like, not just like... If I'm a yuppie from Brentwood here in Southern California, you're not going to come over and get my chihuahua to behave. Or do you do that as well as like train the dog that sniffs out the cocaine that I'm trying to keister coming into Miami?
Well, I might be a little unique that I started in the police dog world. As a police officer with the city of Anaheim, I got a canine early on in my career. I had already had a passion for training animals. Before I became a cop, I thought I was going to train whales and dolphins over at SeaWorld.
Oh, really?
But ended up being a cop. I don't know how.
Really?
I could either end up behind the bars or in front of the bars.
Yeah, I was going to say, that feels like a slow process to kind of stumble into something. Like, you got to go to academy, you know what I mean? I feel like there's a lot of educating before you're like, wait, I'm a cop now?
I don't know how it happened.
Were you drinking very heavily? Like, how does...
it's a good thing I chose the life that I did.
Yeah.
Because very easily you could have...
you're saying it more of a, it's a coin flip.
Yeah.
You were a polarized person. You're not a middle of the road guy. I'm either going to be... Which, with a name like Falco, I mean, that's a great criminal name, too. You could be TV detective or criminal both ways. You hear about Falco? He pulled off the bank job back in North Hollywood. It was crazy.
You see that or a rock star?
Oh.
Yeah. Rock me Amadeus.
You sound like a superhero, Falco. Everything is cool about your name. Anyway.
I got into the police department, and early on, an opening came in the canine unit. So I put in for it, got it. And then the passion never stopped. It just continued. And so I trained bomb dogs and narcotics dogs after I started training police dogs to bite people. I learned the detection side of things. And then SWAT. I was on the SWAT team with the dog.
Now, I want to get into this before I get into the questions that I ask everybody, because I think we need to have some kind of an idea of what does it take to teach a dog to do that. Because Andy is also a KFI listener, and he ran into me at an event. And he talked about how many similarities there are between the tactics you use training a dog and raising your 5 kids.
Yes.
And I am so excited. I am so excited to talk about this, because my dad has always had this theory of, like, if you look at a person's dog, that's also how their kid would be. And so I feel like these are those two worlds coming together in my own.
He's right, because I say the same thing. However, there's people that love their dogs and hate their kids, and there's people that love their kids and don't really care for their dogs. So it doesn't always go hand in hand.
Yeah, it's not always a parallel.
But it does.
If you're teaching a dog to bite someone, is it all German? Like, I feel like everything I know is only from TV and film.
Right. I think cops in particular want it to seem like it's more complicated than anything else, but it's not. You're just simply training a dog behavior, and you have to find the right dog that likes to do certain things genetically. Like most German Shepherds, Belgian Malinois like to grab a hold of something, hold it in their mouth, and bite down really hard. So then we just slowly take that desire, that genetic desire to do that, and then we put a cloth around our arm, what the dog is normally playing tug of war with. And now we make it part of our arm.
So you've connected those dots.
Yep. And so the dogs really want to play. I can't tell you how many times I get a phone call and have gotten phone calls that people will say, I have this dog. He's really mean. He'll make a great police dog. No.
No.
No, not at all. We want a dog that is doing it because they're having fun playing tug of war. And we just eventually teach them that suspects are a big, gigantic toy.
Is that because, like, and I don't know if you hate this guy, but I watched a lot of Cesar Millan. Right. And so is that like he talks about dogs that go red, and is it you don't want a dog that's aggressive, because if they're aggressive, I would imagine that you want to be able to turn them on and turn them off.
Right.
Whereas if it's a play thing or it's a lighthearted behavior in their perspective, you could turn it on and turn it off. Am I right?
Right.
Oh.
You can't control red.
Right.
The place.
Rage-filled animal or right. hyper aggressive. That's yeah. They've got temper issues like yep. my father.
And unfortunately, some dogs, police dogs, we can mistrain them, which is how that's the world I came from early on. It was a very harsh training.
Uh-huh.
And you can take a dog into a place where they won't let go of the suspect. And
wow.
so we want to be very careful that we do it right. And we teach the dog to do it out of a reward-based system in order of biting. Is a behavior. It's not out of necessarily I want to kill you.
Yeah,
it's just something we teach them to do.
The only time I've ever come across a canine dog was other than the elementary school assembly where they always have the guy run and then the dog goes and chases him. Everyone's yep. like, wow, that's so cool, right? Was one time I was doing stand up comedy in Fairfield, California, and there was a guy who he's a canine officer there in Fairfield, and he came to the show. As like he was on this beat, like, and he stopped in just kind of check things out, and then he'll watch a show for a little bit, and then he'll go back out on his patrol, right?
Right.
So we saw him in the mall parking lot the next day, and I recognized him because he's like all of 8'27" and bald as all get out, and wears the cool cop sunglasses, you know. So I see him, and I go, "Hey, cops! The dog's in the back of the car, just sitting there, looking like the most friendly puppy you've ever seen." So I'm sitting there having a conversation with the guy, and he goes, "Oh, he goes to give me. They have like trading cards, right?" And so as soon as I reach, and he's handing it to me, mind you, but as soon as my hand crosses the threshold of that window in that car, that dog goes ballistic and is like, he didn't come out, but his head is out the window and reaching towards me, just and just salivating. And I pissed myself. Like I was just like, he goes, "It's okay. It's okay." And he said something I couldn't remember or understand. Yeah. And then the dog just went back and that play thing you're describing is what it looked like. He's like, "Oh, I did something good. I know I did something good." Like, and he looked like a playful puppy again. And he goes, "He's just protecting me." And he goes, "I'm sorry." He goes, I should have warned you. You can't cross the window threshold. Otherwise he goes nuts." And so then he like calls the dog, gets him into the front seat with him. And he goes, "Watch." He said, "Come here." And then, he said, "But just don't move." And he like whispers something into the dog's ear and the dog goes, "Arr, arr, 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 arr." Yeah. And then he whispers again, the dog goes quiet again and just sitting there panting. And like he gives this dog what I thought was bipolar. Like he just.
No, what happened? Dogs really like that reaction. That reaction of you jumping back is dogs. Some dogs will thrive off of that. That is a huge training opportunity for a dog to get that reaction from somebody.
Okay.
That's that way. Even pet dogs, when the UPS person or the mailman comes every day, they are essentially training the dog to chase them off every day. Right. Oh. So that's why dogs really hate postmen and UPS drivers, is because they always come. And then as the dog's barking, they always go away.
Yeah.
So the dog gets that. Then the dog walks around the house like he's a badass yes. for about an hour thinking, "I just chased that."
Even if it's Chihuahua, doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't care.
Oh my gosh.
But it's the same principle that was happening in that police car, that the dog just loves chasing people away. And sometimes they only do it to men.
Really?
My police dog would only do it to men, and women could walk up to the car.
Not a good boss.
I was single at the time, so I appreciated that.
Yeah,
And also kids.
He's a good wingman, it sounds like. You know what I mean? You got the best of both worlds. Cute yeah. dog.
I would take that dog to every place. The women have to kind of bend over and pet
oh,
them.
My gosh, yeah. right? You don't get out of that car. No. That can't be your move.
No.
Yeah, especially summertime. Everybody's wearing yeah. tank tops.
Want to see my dog?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you could pet the one in the back, too. Come
wait,
on
wait.
Now.
We're here about talking about kids.
Well, how do you think they get here? I mean, come on. That's wild. So you so
then I went from the police dogs to the detection dogs, and then I started training pet dogs. And because I was training police dogs under extreme circumstances, like under gunfire and chasing bad guys, biting them, knocking them down, it became very easy for me to help people with their problematic dogs that are aggressive in that.
Is that really child's play when you're jumping from the one world to the next as much as it seems?
Yeah. No, it fits. It fits perfectly. And we had a lot of success in it because dogs don't necessarily intimidate me. So I've been able to take some of the dogs that were just being, prepared to be euthanized type of situations.
Oh, wow.
And being able to save some of those dogs. You brought up Cesar Millan. He and I did a show together called, I helped him produce a show called Love My Pitbull.
Uh-huh.
And so pitbulls have been a huge part of our training process. And
yeah, I feel like they get a bad rap because of just the way that their breed is made not because of who they really are. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I think if you brought up Chihuahuas too, if Chihuahas were the size of a pit bull, they'd be outlawed before the pit bull.
Because they're way more aggressive.
Because they're
way more insecure, I would imagine too. Is that a part of it? Is that me kind of personifying?
I think it's a little bit, I think it's just who they are. They're just genetic problem dogs.
Yeah.
There's things that happen.
I like you putting it that way.
Designer dogs. They're just genetically, they have issues.
Genetically, it's so great because Andy, you pull up here in like the manliest of pickups. You know what I mean? You got to Google image this guy because he's just like the machismo looking guy and just as nice as can be, but just calmly say, well, you in so many words just call the Chihuahua genetically defective.
Yes, they are. Dalmatians are, Chows are, but, those are the things that we get with these dogs.
That's great. That's fine. So I interrupt you. So you're saying that dogs aren't really insecure as much as it's just a product of their breed per se?
Dogs just want people sometimes to go away. And so it could be that dog has the Chihuahuas, some German Shepherds, some Labrador Retrievers, and some Golden Retrievers just have a fear of certain situations. And what dogs have learned is by barking and biting, it makes things go away. That's why when you got barked at by the police dog and you flinched back, that dog
I felt rewarded strong. That behavior.
Yep,
I validated it. Said, yeah, that works this time and it'll work again next time.
Yep. And I just don't want to be bothered with people, right? So the dog just, and they go away and they go, worked again. And it's rewarding that behavior over and over again, then it becomes like the mailman's the best dog trainer on the planet.
I feel like this is a nice time to transition because I feel like the more I interview you about what you do at training dogs, it's going to be easier for you just when we start talking about your kids and stuff, how they're similar. So here's the thing, though. First, before we get into that, I have a list of questions that I ask everybody just to kind of get to know you and get an idea real quick of who is Andy deep down inside. If you could have any job, Andy, what would that job be? Besides the one you have now, obviously.
I still think, even though I've seen the movie Blackfish, I still think that I want to fulfill that dream of being a dolphin trainer.
At SeaWorld?
Yeah. I know. And that movie kind of hit me hard because I really did love SeaWorld and wanted to work there. But I do want that experience of jumping in the water with a dolphin.
I got to tell you. I don't know what your opinion is of it, but so after that movie came out, they were hit hard and they advertised with us at iHeart here in LA. And it was like the first time they'd been advertising in Los Angeles in forever. And what they asked is some of the people who work at the radio station just to kind of go down there. And I mean, maybe you being an animal trainer and stuff, I think I can relate to this philosophy because my father grew up on a farm. And so it's easy for you to have a more practical approach to animals as opposed to an emotional one. But the good that those people do for animals, I think, is far outweighed. I mean, if you look at it, you got 8 or 9 orca whales that from their perspective, when you talk to the trainers, they're like, these animals, they want for nothing. We're interacting with them all day and they're playing around and everything like that. Now, sure, does it suck that they're stuck in a cage? But it all depends on what your perspective of suck is. They never have to worry about fighting for the meals or defending their life or any of that stuff. They get vitamins, everything, and their health is taken care of. And what they do is they use the money that comes in from the park to go out and do rescues. And you when you go behind the scenes and you get to see the tanks that they have and nets that they have cut off of seals and how they've rehabilitated them only to be released back into the wild. That's the part, having seen that for me, that it is unfortunate that their business has taken a hit because I feel like they do a lot of good. Am I wrong, you think?
No, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. I've visited even the Long Beach Aquarium and other aquariums, and just there is a need, I think, to have that type of organization around too.
And while you can fundraise and have benefits and galas with wealthy people, I think that this is a good way to make a few ducats off of the middle class too, is to have a theme park. You know what
right.
I mean? Why not?
Right.
All right. So it'd be animal trainer, I guess, at SeaWorld then. Yeah. And then, what was the last movie you cried at?
The last movie I cried at probably, well, here we go back to the dog thing, but it's the, what was the name? I can't remember the name of it. It had to do with the woman, bomb dog handler, who got injured. Gosh darn it.
The last dog movie I remember is Max, but that's like the superhuman dog.
I probably cried at that one too. I've been crying a lot lately. I don't know what it is about being a 55-year-old dad to young children, because I have a 4-year-old and my kids like. But it's so emotional with stuff like that. And normally I was not.
With your older kids, because maybe it is. It's just, here's what I know. I think I was always a crier, but when I had kids, it got worse.
Yeah.
Like the reason I put this question in here is because I always make people feel better by saying I famously cried at Blue Steel, the movie, the fighting robot movie.
Yeah,
I'm a sucker for an underdog story. That Andy, what can I tell you? So there was a dog.
She was a bomb dog handler in Afghanistan, Iraq, and
so this is more of a documentary then?
No, it's a movie. Oh. She got blown up. It's a true story. Oh, and then she had to leave the dog behind, and that's the whole story about how. She was able to
try to Google that during the, because here's what's great about podcasting is and like radio, we're sitting going, oh, what is that? And 1800 people are screaming into their earbuds going,
I wish it was coming on.
Oh yeah. You're on Facebook live right now. So maybe it'll come up on your chat.
Going to Tommy. Nobby or Ashley, Tommy.
Now you're a single dad. So my other question was, do you have a hall pass list? But you don't need a hall pass list. You're
Carrie Underwood would always be my
Carrie. That would be your go-to though. That's your number one. That's a good choice.
Yeah,
dynamite legs on that one too.
My gosh.
That's good. And I think that covers it. Oh, this is the one I like to ask last. Now is what do you want most for your kids?
I want them to just simply do what they love and be able to make a living at it. You know, I want them to not need or want for anything. And by doing the thing that they love, whatever that is, and I'll support them.
And so it's interesting because I'm new to asking this question, but it's kind of a little bit of a social experiment I'm doing on this show, is that it seems that, and tell me if I'm wrong, that what you're saying is you would like for them to lead a life of fulfillment. And then I would assume that would mean that they would want for nothing because their life would be fulfilled, but not necessarily a life of luxury. You know what I mean? You don't necessarily need them to be millionaires.
Correct.
And have a ton of money. But if their vocation fulfills that place in their soul, then you, because this is what you've done with your own life, I would imagine, you know what that yields. Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
That makes sense. All right. So you have five kids. Hit me with the ages.
4, 7, mm-hmm. 9, who's almost 10, 11 and 24.
All right. And you've had multiple marriages, right?
Two.
Two different, well, yeah, but yeah. Multiple. I'm sorry. Did I accidentally make you sound like a whore?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way, Andy. I
prefer gigolo than a whore, but it's
tomato. I mean, let's be honest, Andy. So you've had two marriages. Were all the kids from like the previous marriage, or are they split between the two? How?
The oldest is from the previous. The 24-year-old.
And then the rest are from the, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you've got the full gambit. You are back into preschool parenting, but you've also got kid grown up starting their own life. Is the 24-year-old kind of like on their own now, doing their own thing? Man, you are, to use your own Marine reference, you are my white whale of guests. Like you've done it all.
Oh, I've learned a lot.
I have so many questions now.
Yeah, let's go.
So let's get into first. Do you have daughters?
Yes, my oldest, 24-year-old
is a daughter.
The 11 is a boy, 9-year-old is a girl, and then the two youngest are boys.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the, because I feel like we don't get a lot of guests with kids that age. The 24-year-old, what's that? Is there anything you go back after raising a now 24-year-old kid that you kind of go, oh, well, I don't have to put so much pressure on myself with the younger one because you've been through there and you know what it yields, or is it entirely different?
Well, one of the most important things I've learned that helps me in dog training is, and this is the first association between raising dogs and raising kids, is that you can't be guilty when raising something that you love. Right? You can't raise out of guilt. And that is what I did with my oldest one is gave her everything and didn't make her have to do anything and got in and fell into the trap of that what she wanted she kind of got for the most part. And when she said no, I kind of said, okay, I don't want to hurt your feelings because you've already been through enough, right? And so there's this huge guilt. And so I was a single parent then and had my daughter the majority of the time. And so I just felt bad about disciplining her, punishing her. This happens with dogs. When you get dogs that are rescue dogs that come from a very hard life, maybe they've lived on the street and were starved, you know, almost to death. People will sometimes take those dogs and they will coddle them too much and feel guilty about having rules and boundaries and discipline and obedience and all that kind of stuff because they go, oh, the dog's had such a hard life. I don't want to put any more pressure on this poor dog. He needs to just live and be free. Wrong. They need more discipline, more boundaries, more obedience, more structure, and need you there. Need a strong leader.
Is that more likely not only in dogs but in kids to kind of correct that insecurity and that downtrodden life.
Yes.
Is to create some boundaries, get some expectations. And then because with those, this is the thing I've noticed in life, but I only got a 9 and a 6-year-old, is that people seem to be wired in a way that if you give them an obstacle, and then they overcome it, that's how you build self-esteem. Yep. That's, you know what I mean? And pride in oneself and character. But if you find a way to circumnavigate that for them, they lose that. And it, weirdly enough, they become more insecure.
Yep.
Is that your experience too?
Yeah, yeah, she's very insecure. And she's going to listen to this and she's going to kick my ass.
Shut up, Dad.
But I feel at 24, she is so far, she's more like just now beginning adulthood, mm-hmm. right? It's a little delayed. And the sense of responsibility isn't quite where it should be. Because again, I just always gave her money. I didn't yeah. teach her the value of money and how to save money. Because I just wanted to give it to her, right? If she wanted something, we went out and got it.
Yeah.
The difficulty she's had in keeping a job for long periods of time, when once she feels a little bit of pressure, it's easier for her to quit than it mm-hmm. is to work through the challenges of being an employee.
Yep.
Even though I had her working for me for a long period of time, another big mistake, because I was that employer who, oh, take the day off.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, you know, you're too tired to come into work. That's okay. I'll take care of it for you. Right. And so I know this now. Now it's very, I'm very.
Well, that's the hard part about parenting is that, and what I like about your transparency is that you're basically saying it doesn't change the affection, or that it doesn't mean you're less proud of her or don't love her as much or anything. You're just being realistic, and that because that's the lesson you've learned is to be realistic and to approach it with reality as opposed to. And it's, I think I've talked about it recently on the show. I think that this movement that kind of has branched, I learned from Dr. Michael Wetter, the author of Earn It, this self-esteem movement that started in the 70s, where it was all about making your kid feel good about themselves and less about kind of letting them fall through the challenges and stumble early so they can learn to process the negative feelings of rejection or failure or any of that stuff. Is we're creating an unintentionally, I think, we have nothing but the best of intentions, but we're creating a generation that can't deal with hardship, can't deal with strife. There's a reason why we call the greatest generation a generation that won world wars, and my grandfather being a part of that generation, or maybe just after that generation, but still at 5 years old was farming 184 acres of cotton and like it was nothing.
Yep.
Like it was no big deal, right?
And you have to be stronger on later on. I mean, now it's harder. Now I have to train her now.
Yeah.
And it's harder to train her now because it's more emotional now, like that, you know, almost like that really hurts her feelings even more when it's just simple.
You're just trying to help.
Right.
And as you get older, you get more rigid just in who you are.
I had to. Yeah. Because at 18, she still
I'm saying even her.
Yeah.
I'm saying as you grow up as a person, you kind of get a little bit more set in stone, right?
Yeah. 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 And that's the day. That's why I'm trying to really work really hard right now with her to get her to change some of her ways. It's going to be hard. Again, she's 24. But when she was graduating from high school and she hadn't had a job yet, she hadn't made a decision about college. I said, okay, I need you to make these decisions. And there's nobody hiring. It was always so easy for her to say that it just nobody's hiring.
Yeah.
You know, I've applied everywhere. And I said, well, if you don't have this done by the certain date, then I'm going to take you and all your belongings and take you to your mom's house. And that's where you're going to live.
Yeah.
And she doesn't like her mom. So I had to hold to it. And I took her over there and dropped her off with all their luck because she didn't do it. But then she got two jobs immediately. But it hurt my
suddenly
feelings.
It worked. Yes.
Yeah.
See, and that's the part the kid, and I hope she's hearing this part too, is that the part that I think it's hard to realize as a kid until you get older is I remember in junior high, I was starting my teenage rebellion with my dad, and literally while he was taking a leak, I told him my parents are also divorced and my dad got remarried. And I told him I was leaving to go live with my mom. And I know now, knowing who he is as a grown up and being I don't see him as a peer, but I can relate to him more now that I have kids and understand where he was coming from. I know that that hurt him. Mm-hmm. I know that it stung hard, but he had to his credit, he had to do the right thing and not necessarily even the thing that, you know, he didn't make it about him. He just was like, all right, if that's what you want to do. But I know that that stung. And that's the thing is I've gotten in arguments with my own wife where she's like, you know, oh, you're so hard on them. And I tell her not in front of the kids, but I go, do you think I relish this? Do you think I really wallow in telling them no to things and being a little gruff with them? It's not like I love it, but I do think it's necessary. And I don't think I'm forcing it. I don't think it's entirely disingenuous, but it's not fun. No, right?
It's not fun, but I think when you see the results, and so I know we'll get to my younger kids shortly, but I'm way better this time around, right? I'm not,
because you're nipping in the bud.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I see the results a lot faster now. And so I guess the joy in being mean.
The 4-year-old already has her own apartment. Like
the 4-year-old is amazing because he says, yes, sir. And he stands up and he even salutes me. It's because I am much.
Oh, geez. My phone. Sorry.
Much stronger in that, that I'm well aware of what happens when you don't do that. Right.
Yeah.
And it's longer sadness because I really worry about my oldest daughter. And is she going to start, you know, start acting like an adult?
What's it like being a single dad and raising a daughter?
Oh, man. It is not easy.
Here's the thing. I hate this. I really am starting to hate this about me because it's mostly my ignorance. But and I've told it so many times. The comedian Tommy Jonigan had this great joke. He was having a daughter, and people always ask, "What are you going to do when she starts dating?" And he's like, "Can I hold her? Can I see her face before we sexualize her, please?" Like, yeah. and it's, but it is. I think it's a curiosity that I think all guys who only have sons, because that's what we displace, right? Mm. Like, is. But I would imagine that the dating thing would probably be the easiest thing to navigate, and if I was to pull myself out of it. Am I wrong or?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the easiest thing for me.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a lot of experience dating and can warn my daughter of some of my friends I've seen date on what it is to look for in a boy and what their motivation actually is. So that part for me actually is probably the easier part of raising a daughter. It's the other emotional stuff that girls go through that seems to be entirely different than my 3 boys. Mm. I can discipline my boys and feel good about it because they respond how I'm used to.
Right.
And I'll say
because
no.
Because you feel like you're speaking the exact same language, yeah. Right?
But somehow it gets turned around with the girls. Somehow it becomes way more about I'm attacking them. Or I don't know. Even my
can they turn it into verbal? Are they really good at verbal jujitsu? Like they could use your own energy against you, or that's verbal aikido, I guess.
Yes, yes. My oldest really was powerfully
She's
good at
champion
that.
Of that. Oh, that's good.
God. She can make me feel so guilty and so bad that nobody else's parents acts like this. It's just so dramatic.
That's true. I used to say that all the time to my dad, but maybe it's because I'm a son. But he would say, "Go live with him." Like. Yeah. It was like, see how you like it there.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah. The response is so different.
Yeah.
Even my youngest daughter, she can take a little spanking on the butt.
Yeah.
She can take one of my powerful flicks. My sons will cry in a heartbeat.
Really?
But she'll just turn and look at me and give me nothing.
That's funny.
But if I hurt her feelings, she's quick to cry. Or if I take something away, she'll cry. But I think she's faking it half the time.
To play you. Yeah. Yeah. They're emotional masters.
She has told people that she goes, all I got to do is act, you know, give my dad a sad face and he'll give me what I want.
Isn't that funny? Like that's one of my favorite moments of parenting is when you could see your kid be really ingenious, but completely stupid at the same time. Like ingenious in that they figured out this tactic that is complete. You're completely unaware of. But because they're so young, they'll completely just tell you. Like, they'll just go, oh, yeah, I totally do that. And it's completely blowing their whole game. And that's my fear is that I see, especially my younger son, he has an ability to play my wife. Like, he could play her like a fiddle, man. He just knows exactly what buttons to press, what strings to pluck, and get whatever it is he needs. And I just say, but then there's a secret fear that sometimes keeps me up at night. Is like, well, what is it? Because I feel like he could never do that with me. I'm like, but technically, I wouldn't know if he was doing this, right? Like, that would be part of the game. Is that what is it? Maybe he's got some bigger master plan. And that kid gives me so much gray hair. Oh, but all right. So now you're in the middle of teenage years. You've experienced teenage years. What have you gleaned from going through that era of parenting?
I got to do a better job early. You know, in those early stages.
You lay the foundation.
Really early.
What do you mean? Like, what is it? Is it really, does it all boil down to expectation and boundaries? Or is there more involved?
There's a little bit more. You got to find out what motivates the child. Because all 5 of them are different. They each have their own motivation. Is it to, one of them just doesn't want to disappoint me. That's my 11-year-old. Mm. If I ever tell him, you know, that you've really disappointed me or you've,
I'm not mad. I'm disappointed. Yeah, you can play that one.
Yeah, I thought you respected me more than that. And and he's like, that kills him.
Really?
He thinks that he disappointed me, or I'm not proud of him. Right?
Oh.
I'm not proud of what you just did.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, that'll...
That gets him.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just screamed at him, that would be almost white noise.
Yeah, well, if I yelled at him, he'd really be upset.
Oh, okay.
Right? That's almost too far, right? And so it's the same thing with dogs, right? You got to find out what tool is going to work for your dog. Some people put a pinch collar, which is a very prongy collar, on a dog that, you know, will poop, you know, piss all over itself and urine, you know. And
that's too aggressive.
Yeah, you're gone too hard. And that would be with my 11-year-old. I can't use a pinch collar with my 11-year-old.
Right.
I just have to figure out what it is that needs to be said to get him to understand that how much.
That's a great way to look at it, because, you know, it's funny when we used to have a boxer hound mix, and he passed away a couple of years ago, but that the vet one time, she pulled out like a treat just to get his attention, and he zeroed in on her, and she goes, "Oh, you're not motivated by food or anything." And it's not that we withheld food from the dog, but you're right. Yeah. Like he loved treats. If he could eat it. In fact, that's how we kind of knew he was not much longer for this world, as I brought a treat, and he was like, not interested. I was like, oh no.
That's my 9-year-old daughter. That's her motivation is things.
Yeah.
Right. And she likes earrings. She likes dresses and shoes.
So you find that thing.
Yep.
And now here's the thing. I agree wholeheartedly. Right now, both of my kids love video games. And when I see people with teenagers and their phones, like, I'm like, listen, if you're going to pay for the phone, like, I feel like you could use it in both ways. You could use it as a way as motivation to go, like, go get a job, make some money if you want a phone. And pay for it with your own thing. Or if I'm paying for it, that's my leash. You know what I mean? That's what I could get a little prong collar if I need to. Like, I love the idea of these apps that, you know, if you can text your kid, and then if they don't respond, you could shut down their phone until they reply back to your text.
Yeah.
Which is, I was like, I love this. Yeah. I love playing Nazi mind games with my kids. It's going to be so much fun. Am I completely ignorant or?
No, with all the stuff that my children have, for toys or phones or devices that they have, they all belong to me.
Mm.
And that's what I teach in our dog training too, is your dog must believe that everything in the house is yours, not his, right?
Oh.
The food bowl, the toys, everything. And so it's the same thing with the kids. They all understand that everything belongs to me.
But we probably over-personalize that and make it feel like, you know, like we're, for lack of better, we're rubbing their nose in it. You know what I mean? For lack of a better way of putting it. But it isn't that.
No, if it's how they're raised and understanding that all this stuff belongs to me. And as long as you comply with the rules and the boundaries that go along with having this thing, then I'm more than happy to have you play with it. And they have one that's assigned to them.
Yeah.
Now, this sounds very strict, right? So it's not at all.
Not to me.
Yeah, but each one of their tablets have a colored cover. So they have a green one, blue one, red one, and that's theirs to play with, except for in the end, it still belongs to me, and I can decide whether they play with it, when and how and wherever.
Right.
If you give them that power of having it be theirs, then it becomes more of it's a power struggle between their belonging and me wanting it back.
Oh.
Right? So now I just say, give it to me, and they're pretty quick to just hand it over because they know that everything belongs to me. But it started early with all of them. The four, not the 24. I made all mistakes with the 24-year-old. Again, completely different. She looks and goes, like, she looks at me like,
screw you.
When did all this happen? Like, and she asks me all the time, how come they get certain things that I didn't get? And so she's noticing not only that they have a little bit more than she did, but it's because it's part of the plan.
It's like they're, but it's funny because I remember when my nephew was born, he's the first grandkid, and watching my father transition from being dad to grandfather was a very weird thing. To be 16 years old and in the throes of your own, like, kind of headbutting phase of life, and then to watch him be the sweetest, kindest, most fun-loving person to this little flesh slug, it was so weird. It was so weird. I can't tell you. It was so... I just was like, who is this guy? Mm. But in your case, she's seeing kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
Like, she's seeing a more aggressive guy with your kids. You know what I mean? And kind of boundaries, here's how it's going to be.
That's what's funny is she thinks they have more. I mean, that's the funny thing about it. But she's just seeing me perform in a different way.
And they probably do have more because of just time. You know what I mean? Like what technology. They probably have more tablets and things in that sense. But they also have more boundaries. They also have more expectations and more rules, right?
Yeah, they absolutely do. And she kind of looks at them sometimes because I'll say, hey, go get dressed. And they jump up, yes, sir. And they really do say, yes, sir.
That's great.
And they go, yes, sir. And they go like right away. And they go, she's just doing that because they want something. Or he's just doing it because he wants something. Okay.
No, that's the expectation, right?
I go, have you ever been here when they've not done that? It's not like today they decided to do it.
Right.
She can come there any time of day and and they go.
It must kind of blow your mind to a certain extent because of not only your experience with your kids, but also your experience in your vocation is that I always think of when we go out to eat at a restaurant, you know what I mean? That there's, and I'm, here's the thing. I never get up on a soapbox with people and tell them what they should or should not be doing with parenting. But what I find interesting is that we will always get compliments on our kids about how they just kind of sit and chill or, and they, we've had moments, don't get me wrong, but not the running around and the knocking stuff over and the climbing all over the, but like, even now I've gotten to a point where even they get tired and they start to lay down in the booth. I go, sit up. Like, I go, you know, this isn't a bed. They go, I'm tired. I said, I don't care if you're tired.
Right.
I said, I go, we, you sit up at a restaurant. It's not your hotel room or your own bedroom. Like this is, we're guests in this establishment. You know what I mean? And you have to act accordingly, kind of a thing. And when you just have that be the expectation, even when they were babies in just the high chair sitting there squawking, and if they squawked, we would just go, shh, no, and just remind them that that's, I even did the season one. Yeah. I've done that as a parent. I got to be honest. I've done that. Yeah. Shh, no. Did you see?
Good training.
I haven't done the prong to the neck yet.
Yep.
I'm not saying I'm above it. Maybe when they get 13, I'll give them a little no.
Yep. Well, this is one of the first things we teach our group obedience class when we see them on day one is that you have to teach same way in the home as you would outside of the home. It has to be the same. If you're not going to raise your voice in public, don't raise your voice in the home. You want to get your child or your dog to listen to you under whatever voice, whatever positioning that you're at that you have in public and at home has to be the same. Most people tend to yell and scream a little bit louder inside their house than they will outside their house.
Yeah, I teeth talk to my kids in a grocery store. Yeah. Listen to me.
Well, it happens sometimes kids, smart kids or kids that are manipulative will learn that and they'll go, you know, they're not going to yell.
This is a safe space.
Yeah. And I can push a little bit farther, right? And so they contend. You've seen these kids in the grocery store, right?
Yes.
Like, ah! And
fucking kill you. Right. And it's a different it's funny because it's not, again, I'm not saying that one way of parenting is better than the other. What I'm saying is just it's a different perspective and they yield different results. I'm sure I'm going to look back just like you experienced that everything you do, you're going to look back and go, maybe I could have done that a little bit different. I think we're all going at this parenting thing with the expectation of ourselves of nailing it 100%, which is impossible. No. And I think the more grace you could give yourself and a little slack you could cut yourself, you'll actually end up doing a slightly better job. I don't know, but I like that people go, you just go to the grocery store with your kids by themselves? And in my perspective, I've always been like, yeah. I mean, as they got older and we're going to preschool, I think it's more of, I recently read this study, and we're going to go over it with Dr. J when he comes on the show, but there's a study that says that sugar does nothing to hyperactivity in kids as far as their behavior, right? And I said this to a doctor recently, and the doctor's like, well, I disagree. And I was like, well, this is the New England Journal of Medicine did this study. And I said, but he goes, and what they did find, though, is that it did increase the parent's sensitivity to their behavior. So in a sense, giving your kid sugar later on in the day actually makes you more sensitive to their behavior than it actually affects their behavior in any way, shape, or form, which I thought was really interesting. And I think that that could be the case is that when I was going to the grocery store when they were in preschool and it was so easy, then when I start to reintegrate them into it and they're moving around, they're not just in the cart and they're slapping at each other and I'm going, knock it off, you know, given that now, there was those times where I was like, man, this sucks ass. And then all I had to do is start this thing where I said, listen, here's how this is going to go down. We're going to go into this grocery store. I'm going to give you one warning. I'm going to say, knock it off. After that, I go, if you're out of line, I'm going to correct you. I said, but every time you do something wrong in my head, you're going to lose a day of video games. And you won't know how many days you've lost until we get back in this car.
Yep.
And it is so funny how attentive they become. It's crazy how much I might as well be holding a treat in my hand and they're just locked in wherever that hand goes.
That is really important because, you got to set yourself up for success. And that's what we talk about in dog training and in training your kids is that don't walk into the store wondering what's going to happen. You already know, right?
Okay.
The child has shown you somewhere where their weakness is. Is it in crowds? Is it in this place? It's happened once before, right? So before you go back into that situation, try to set yourself up for success. And with kids, it's easy because you can talk to them and communicate. Dogs, you got to do something completely different. But now we don't have as many talks entering a grocery store as we used to because now they just know what the way we react in the grocery store or the mall. And you brought up something. I walked into the mall during the Christmas time, and I had all four of the little ones with me. And as I'm walking in, a lady's walking out with one of her kids. Her hair's messed up, and I think her clothes were kind of disheveled. She comes out, she goes, she looks at me, looks down at the kids, looks back at me, goes, "You're going in there with them?" I said, "Yeah.
Yeah, why not?"
Why not? And she's going, "Oh, God bless you." And then she walked out like, "Oh, yeah." Like she couldn't like, "Oh my God, I can't imagine going in with more than the one I could handle."
Yeah. Right?
But again, it's just, it's setting up for success. We talked about doing things in the home, about restaurants. They all know that they, you know, when we sit at the dinner table, there's no devices. They have to sit in their own chairs. They got their chairs that they're supposed to sit on. There's no playing. There's no throwing stuff around. And, but that's, again, you're setting yourself up for being out in public by doing things at home in a way that they understand. And it's a lot easier for a child to understand, you know, what it's, what they're supposed to do when they're eating. If that's
always normal. Yeah.
Yep. If it's kind of like laying on the ground in front of the television, and with their feet up on something. And
then you go to a restaurant.
Try to a restaurant. They're going,
yeah.
I don't understand.
Why do I have to sit here?
Yeah, I'm going
to
lay down. Yeah. Because I lay down at home, right?
I'm going to pick at the gum underneath the table while I sit underneath here. Why?
Yeah, exactly. It tastes good.
I might even have some.
Yeah. You mix the red with the green, and it's perfect.
It's delightful.
But yeah, I mean, you got to set up those. You got to set yourself up for success by really concentrating on what is it you're teaching at home, and how is that going to affect you when you go out in public, right?
I love it. Is there anything else before we move on to our next segment? Is there anything else that you can think of, you know, that would tie? I feel like you've done a great job. But in your mind, is there anything that kind of you've learned tying back to between the dog training and the raising of kids, or any other parental advice as a guy who's been through the full spectrum? Anything?
Well, I think I always try to learn how people learn through psychology. You know, I get on the internet and study a little bit of psychology and YouTube videos on the different kinds of theories that are out there, like the social learning theory, which is Albert Bandura. I think it's a Bobo doll experiment, where people, how they learn. There's four things that you need. Mm-hmm. One of them is you need their attention, right? You need, if you're going to teach somebody something, they have to be paying attention to you. They can't be multitasking, doing other things. And so when I'm teaching somebody about their dog, I make sure that I have their attention. In other words, they're looking at me, not looking down at their dog or looking at their text and that kind of stuff. Seems pretty easy.
Yeah.
But it also works for kids too. How many times have we tried to talk to our kids when one eyeball is on the PS4 and the other eyeball is on kind of looking at you like
that? And I lecture a little bit, so mine glaze over.
Yeah.
Just look into a corner of the ceiling.
So we put everything down, turn everything off. I need you to stand. I hold their hands and I want to talk to you. And not look around, especially when it's something really important, right? Yeah. So you got to make sure they're intention.
And it's not when you're saying goodbye before they go to school. You have a moment with each one. No. Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
No, it's like when I need to teach you something, you need to stop and listen. And then memory obviously is important if they can't remember what it is that they're doing. So you have to find a way to help them remember something. And so I can talk to them about something that I learned as a police officer, which are lots of lessons as a police officer that I can convey, or as a child and that kind of stuff. So I often use kind of example teaching and give them stories behind why it is this is important. Mm-hmm. And I even use my older daughter. I said, you know, this is really important. And I'll talk about why I learned that it's important, that the first time around I made some mistakes. And I'm fairly honest with the kids, not to a bad extent.
Yeah.
Just enough to let them know I've lived. And I know what you're going through. I know how hard my 11-year-old has been going through some things with this girl that he likes.
I think that transparency creates a this is a bad term because it also means within a romantic relationship, but it creates a level of intimacy. It creates a better connection. That's the way I want to say it. When you are that transparent, and I think to a certain extent are willing to admit where you've failed before, it creates a reassurance, a bond,
okay. Oh, for sure.
And you were saying with your 11-year-old and dating, I think you said?
Yeah, he's going through this little girl thing that I think is just now starting to hit him, the disappointment of a girl not liking him the way that he likes her.
Yeah.
And say, being able to sit down and say, these are great moments, right? We sit down and go, oh, dude, listen. Yeah. This is just the beginning.
Let me tell you. Let me show you my list, son. Come
on. I try not to talk about their mom at all, but I talk about everybody else. And then teaching them how to replicate something. So showing them first is so important. So instead of just letting them try to figure it out all the time is not, I don't think, always the best. I actually try to show them, to give them the muscle memory and show them, you know, so they can watch me do it and then do it.
And that's something that I think I fall short on that. I mean, I'll walk them through a task. Like if it's something new, like what I do with teeth brushing, let's use that as an example. When we start off when they're babies, they give them the toothbrush. They just kind of chew on. And then eventually they get old enough where I show them how to brush their teeth and I'm doing it with me. And then once they get to where they're using like kind of grown up toothpaste that they're not supposed to swallow, then I would brush their teeth a little bit and then I'd let them have a turn to, you know, that kind of stuff. So I'm kind of, maybe now the 6-year old, I brush his teeth at night, but he brushes them in the morning kind of a thing. Yep. Is that replicating? Am I?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
Good.
And but also understanding that the things you do, they're watching you.
Yes. Right?
And so that
I can
made
model.
That made it more important for me because there's things that I model that probably in the past have not been great, like how many beers I drink or how many glasses of wine.
I'm not too good at that.
Cussing and things like that.
My son came up to me one time when I had some friends, or when I wasn't, but it was funny that I was like, I wonder if I'm okay with him being this comfortable. But he just came up to me and goes, you're drunk.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm not. But, yep. And I had to think about that one.
Yeah, try to minimize those things. What I think is going to be important to them as they get to be adults. Am I actually showing them, you know,
so
the
you
right
have
way of doing things?
Attention, remembering, yep. And replicating. Is yep. that the, yep. Did I get them all?
Yep. No, there's
oh,
one, okay. more.
Oh, one more. Oh, your it? Notes. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make it a quiz for you. But
reinforcement. I knew there was one other one. That's
so
the,
when
the
they do
one.
It, then you got to acknowledge it.
Yeah, you got to find a way to acknowledge it. Not always. I call it Las Vegas training, where you don't always get the jackpot, right? You just get little things here and there, little hints that you're on the right
because
track.
Because if you overpraise, it diminishes the
exactly.
single praise.
Look at you. You could be a dog trainer.
I might be applying for a job with you here. So.
Right. But there's got to be some type of reinforcement, acknowledging them and even noticing. You know, when they've done something right, where maybe they're not even, they're just, they've done it now because you've trained them well enough that they just happen to do something, which is not my daughter's case. She can still leave her snot rag. She has allergies, so yeah. She leaves her Kleenex everywhere, right? The one day I see her pick up one on her own without me telling her, we're going to throw a party. I'm taking her to Disneyland. But I think that's kind of the thing that has
heavy
to be.
Reinforcement.
Right? Oh
heavy
my gosh, because it's just like, I want to strangle her.
That's so funny.
But the other day she said, hey dad, I'm going to go do this thing. Whatever it was very positive. And I said, oh my gosh, Ray, you know how proud I am that you've said that and that you're going to do that. That makes me so happy. Let's go to the store. And I took her to 7-Eleven. She likes corn nuts for some reason. I don't know. So I went and got her some corn nuts and some M&Ms and made a pretty big deal about a little thing.
Yeah.
Right? But my older son, my 11-year-old, he's actually is a really, really good kid. You know, I don't want to praise him for every little thing he does because I'll tell him, hey, Kelly, take out the trash. He gets, yes, dad. He gets up right away and takes out the trash. So every so often, I just have to give him a good boy for all the good things that he does.
It's funny, while they are less stressful, I think, to parent those kinds of kids, but it's not, I think that to a certain extent, they're more challenging.
Yep.
Because it's not as clear. Like, it's easy to get complacent.
Yep.
With a kid who's always even keeled and good and just kind of, you know, trickles along and goes through life, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think the last little part before I forget is when you have this many kids, you got to be careful, I think, on some level too, of rewarding one more so than the other. Because it can be hard on the one who's not that doing that well.
Oh, five, too. Oh, my gosh.
So that's why I say for my son, I can't reward him for every good thing he does because he does a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's my favorite or he's perfect. Nothing. Because actually, I like the challenge of my 11-year-old daughter. I'm going to figure her out. Right. But if I'm rewarding him 10 times a day and only rewarding her once every couple days, because that's kind of how it comes down to, is that would be hard on her. Right. She goes, how come he gets everything? How come he gets all the praise and that kind of stuff? So I think on some level, too, I'm really careful on paying attention to the affirmations I give each one of the kids. Every so often, the 4-year-old, I'll say, you know what? You're the best kid. You're the best out of all of them. I'm just going to keep you and get rid of the rest. And they're old enough now that they
get it.
Yeah.
My current running gag is that one of them is going to get more of the will, and they love this kid.
Yeah. And they see the other older kids looking. Yeah. Right. I know I'm his favorite. So, but I think still there's a level of, you have to make sure that you're not.
Yeah. In order to make that joke, you have to be connected. You know what I mean? Right. Like, yeah. That's good stuff, man. Thanks. All right, let's take a quick break, and we're going to do this. I'm going to see how this works. I had this idea, and unfortunately, Andy is the guinea pig for this, I found this app that's like a randomizer wheel. And so I came up with the different kind of segments I've always wanted to do on the show, but can never kind of pick one. So I figure I'm going to let fate decide what Andy and I are going to talk about in this next segment. Oh, and wait, no, let me stop it. Let's see, because I think I even have a sound here that should play. Nope, it's not going to do it. Stupid thing. All right, so it's scrolling through here. Oh, this is perfect and exactly what I was afraid of. This is called Why Does My Wife Do This? And we talked about this even beforehand. It's the idea of it is marital pet peeves. And so as a guy who's been divorced a couple of times, you may have an idea or two or a suggestion to mention. I'm going to apologize in advance. But Andy and I are going to talk about marital pet peeves when we come back after these messages. Now don't miss him, a son of a man. Hey, Nobby. I chose that for you, Andy. A little "Hair of the Dog" by Nazareth. I figured that would be fun.
Thank
and
you.
I like this song. Is that annoying that there's everything is dog related in your world? I imagine you wouldn't choose this unless you kind of love it, right?
I do.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have a favorite dog themed like classic rock song or any kind of song? Is there? That's the only one. You got your staple "Who Let the Dogs Out," which I think is just such trash.
I'm done.
That's the Justin Bieber of dog theme songs, right? But you can't go wrong with Nazareth, I feel like.
No, that's going to be my new one. I like that.
That's a good one. But I couldn't think of, let's see, there was one of Fred or something. I want to say, because I had a basset hound named Fred, and maybe it was a Ray Stevens song. But I remember Old Yeller. Old Yeller, that was a good one, but it was more of a movie theme.
You know, I probably should have one.
All right, so here's the thing. We'll just kind of, I haven't done this segment. It's kind of come up organically, but I think it's a fun, it's one of the things that I'm always, I get a charge out of talking about it whenever it comes up, is the little minute things that happen in a relationship that drive the other person nuts. Like currently, mine is, and it's been going for a long time now, mine is my wife likes sunlight, which I don't begrudge her liking sunlight. I think it's natural. I think in LA we have a vitamin D deficiency problem, ironically enough. So I get it. But what she does is she opens the blinds to our bedroom, right? And then leaves. So she's not in there enjoying the sunlight. And all it makes it is that because I'm a guy who will get up and then I will go take a shower and I'll have like some underwear in the bathroom. And then when I walk around, and my house, the bedroom window faces the front of the yard. So I've got my kibbles and bits just dangling out there when I'm walking to that. And nobody's looking. You know what I mean? I got my neighbor, George Pajon. That's the other thing. I got a rock and roll guy who lives across the street from me. Right. I don't need him seeing when I'm not packing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Rock and roll guy playing guitar, too. I mean, the fact that it's just not grazing the bottom of his tibia, I'm sure. But my point is, every time I go in there and then I gotta close the blinds, right? I gotta shut it down just so I can get dressed. I mean, do you think I'm overanalyzing this or?
No, absolutely
that's
not.
That's incredibly frustrating.
I'm with you.
Thank you for lying. I appreciate it. And I said to her, I said, honey, I go, here's the thing. I get the sunlight, but it's not like she ever goes into the bedroom, Andy, and reads a book, reads a magazine, takes a nap. None of that stuff. And here's the kicker, too, is that nobody is ever in the bedroom all day. We shut the door because we have one of those low IKEA beds, which is another bad move because then the dog comes in and lays on the bed. And I'm not that guy who likes the dog on the bed. Because I'm not that guy who likes the dog on the bed, that means that the dog likes to lay on top of my pillow. So I get to smell dog ass when I go to bed.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't really smell it. I think it's more placebo, but I'm just afraid that the one day I'm going to get pink eye or something, and I'm going to know it's because of my stupid little chihuahua shit dog ass that I have to live with. These are real problems, Andy.
I'm with you. I don't want dog ass on my pillow.
Right? Nobody does.
No.
And it's all because she won't close the blind. No,
I don't believe dogs belong on the bed and the couch, but I'm a dog and I love dogs.
So you don't even, because here's the thing, you're probably not a lap dog guy. Every dog has to be triple digits when it comes to tonnage in the Falco household, I imagine, right?
I love big dogs.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the lap experience is not one for you. You get an 18 pound head laid on your thigh is the best you got, right?
Yeah.
Well,
you can kneel down and pet the dog and sit on the ground with your dog. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the furniture's for the human beings.
Yeah, I agree. But here's the thing. When we had the boxer hound, I was very anti dog. Now that we have the chihuahua, it doesn't bother me. I like her to sit in my lap. I pretend to be a Bond villain when I'm watching Netflix.
Right.
I'm a very exciting person, Andy. The point is, and I've already gotten off topic here, but I always like coming home. Rocky was his name, our boxer hound mix. He's about 130, 50 pounds, somewhere in there. And it was so great. This is what's great about the big dog that I don't get with the little dog. Is that when you come into the house and he had found his way onto the couch, like he's now on the couch, but he knows he's not supposed to be on the couch. This is the closest I can to being that annoying person. I don't know if they annoy you. No, maybe you can't even say it in your profession, but it's like, he thinks he's a person, like that person.
Yeah, he's not a person. That's, yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's a dog.
Exactly. And, but that's the, this is the closest I come when he's got that like forlorn look and yeah. he's slow.
Slides off. Yeah.
Like, he sneaks off like he won't. Like, I'm not going to know. And I, and there's a part, there's been moments where I've been frustrated by it. And then there's been moments where I thought it was kind of adorable. But anyway, get back to this, wow. the tragedy of my blinds.
Yes.
And I've said it before, I think, on this show, but it was years ago. And this is how much of a problem it is. It does not go away. Is this that nobody is in there to enjoy the sunlight. So therefore, to me, the sunlight is without purpose. You might as well take the window out, because the only reason that window exists right now is for a neighbor to unfortunately get me get a shot of me in my birthday suit or some elderly woman walking her German Shepherd to be cruising by. And sees my fruit basket dangling around while I'm trying to get on my Duluth Trading Company underwear. That's it.
Fantastic. I'm glad that image is in my face of you walking around with your.
You're welcome. That's what this show brings to the table. Hey, yeah. I'm going to talk about some people here, and then I want to hear some marital pet peeves from you. Okay. You're not off the hook. But I want to tell you guys about my friends at Sunbaskets. Now, you've only heard me talk about them one other time, and I got my basket, my box. It's technically a box. What Sunbasket is, if you go to sunbasket.com/dadpodcast, you get $35 off your first order. Now, why do I want this, Justin? I'll tell you why you want this, especially if you are the one cooking meals, because I've been there. You get tired of trying to make healthy options for your kids, right? And you're trying to figure out what's great about this is you can get, say, 3 meals a week. You can get more, but I find it comfort in going 3 meals a week. I'm going to get something different. You know what I mean? Something that's out of the ordinary, and I'm going to get something that's all organic. They got pasture-raised eggs. They have sustainably sourced fish. All of the produce is egg. They even have non-GMO tofu. All of it's organic and sustainable, farm-to-table type stuff, right? And the recipes are delicious. I had the steaks with chimichurri and harissa roasted sweet potatoes. Now, maybe some of you listening to this are, you know, world-class trained chefs. I don't know. But what I can tell you is before this, I didn't know what harissa roasted sweet potatoes were. And I love sweet potatoes. And it's like a kind of a sweet and spicy chili sauce, a chili powder that you put on it. And it was amazing. And so I went and found it. This is what's great about Sunbaskets, too, is they teach you these things as they walk you through making these delicious meals. And then you can repeat them. So I went and got some harissa seasoning and I threw it on some sweet potatoes. Oh, hell, I'll throw it on some chicken. I think I threw it on some pulled pork that we were watching during the football games this weekend. And I love it. And even in their menus, so they give you a menu, you pick the meal, and while you're cooking it, while it's walking you through the recipe, not only do they say, okay, do this, preheat the oven. And then when you finish that, you say, like it says right here, while the sweet potatoes roast, prepare the chimichurri. And then you make the chimichurri. It's like, okay, set the chimichurri aside and now start cooking the steaks. And they walk you through it, right? And they even have little sections where you could say the kids can help. And if you're sitting there going, Justin, my kids won't eat anything, here's what I've also learned. My kids had all of these dishes and enjoyed them all because they helped. I think if you get them to participate, I know it sounds crazy, and I know it could be annoying. Maybe that's what you do too. Maybe on Sunbasket night, when you're going to do the Sunbasket dinner, you get a glass of wine, you pour it for yourself, and you make these kids go watch the TV, and that's your off night. Or you make it a family affair, and everybody cooks. But it's entirely up to you. They walk you through everything. It's outstanding. So again, go to sunbasket.com/dadpodcast, $35 off your first order. Again, sunbasket.com/dadpodcast, $35 off your first order, and that link is in the description of this episode. All right. Sorry to go off on that tangent there, Andy. But
no, my daughter and I do a cooking show on Facebook called Constance Cooking. And that's her real first name. We call her Ray Ray.
Oh.
Anyway, but it's called Constance Cooking. And
Where can people see it? Give it a plug.
Constance Cooking on YouTube? Facebook.
Facebook. Yeah, oh, okay.
Just type in Constance Cooking and it'll come up.
I'll put a link in the in the description of this episode here so people can
cook live.
What's the last thing that you now? Because here's the thing I learned from Sunbaskets that I like is you'll cook like a pork chop or a chicken cutlet in a pan. And then what they do is they'll give you like kale or even had some chard, which I didn't know what it was until Sunbaskets told me. And you mix that, you wilt it, and it kind of sops up some of that juice that you've made from cooking the meat, and you put a little garlic and some seasoning. And I know you're laughing at me.
No, it's good.
But because I never thought of this stuff. My parents, grilled cheese was probably the extent of what I had growing up. And it tastes so good. Oh, my gosh. What's the last thing you guys cooked on cooking with Constance?
We do a lot of pressure cooker cooking.
Oh.
Because you could all do it in one pot.
Yeah.
You just throw everything in there and it's easy for us to do the show. And we have a three camera shot that shows you inside the pot and all that kind of stuff. I think the last thing we made was pozole. It was a little bit too hot. It's a Mexican soup.
Oh.
And then we made spaghetti and sauces last night, which was not pressure cooker. That's the reason most everything we've done up to this point has been pressure cooker, except for last night.
It's a good time of year. Pressure cooking and parenting. I'm mixing up pressure cooker and slow cooker. I like a crock pot. Yeah.
We'll do that, but we do pressure cooker because it only takes like 8 to 10 minutes to cook a meal.
Yeah. And you set a timer when you leave in the morning. Oh.
Yeah. That and with a slow cooker. Yeah.
But the pressure cooker, you could cook ribs in 8 to 10 minutes.
Yes. It is amazing.
Every time I've thought about buying one, though, my father said, he's joking, but I think that puts you on a no-fly list or something.
Yeah.
Whatever. Oh, it does? Oh.
No, it doesn't. Because they're electric. It's not like the one that they use in Boston.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So what were some of your, and here's the thing. You could do whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you what to talk about in your marital pet peeving, mm-hmm. but what would be, these could be things that ended your marriage. These could be, I love that the randomizer found the worst possible segment or best. No, we'll find out. Or maybe you can even give us some of the pet peeves that your ex-wives hit you with.
Yeah. Well, maybe too late for most of our listeners. And it's definitely too late for me. But I can quite honestly tell you that most of the things I loved about my wife, I dated them, were the things that drove me crazy later on.
Really?
Almost always. My first wife was French Canadian, so she had this French accent and had different words for all kinds of stuff. And I can't think of all of them right now. And she would say, shut the light or something like that. And so turn off the light. And I go, no, it's turn off the light. In the beginning, it was, that's cute. You say, shut the light.
Yeah.
And it's so cute. You have this little accent.
And then it grates on you.
Then later on, I go, fucking, would you? No, it's turn off the light.
This is why I love this. Is because something so simple as shut the light quickly turns into, it's turn off the light.
How many times do I have to talk about it?
Stop it. Stop it. What you're saying is nothing short of an attack on me.
Right. Okay, we're at the grocery store. Hey, can you go get the carriage? I said, the what? It's a freaking grocery cart.
You're in America now.
Damn it. So that was the first wife. So most of those things were irritating. And that she liked everything that I liked. So I played hockey. She played hockey. She wanted to play hockey after I played hockey. Then she wanted me to be her coach. And then she wanted to go to the hockey games. And I go, can I just go with the guys? And so in the beginning, I loved all the stuff we did like. But then I was like, so I go, can I just have my own thing?
Yeah.
You have to like everything that I do. I don't want you to like
I'm going
everything.
Through that a little bit. I think I'm in the beginning phases. You might have ruined football for me, Andy, because I went my entire adult life enjoying football, my wife having no interest in it. And it always kind of bothered me because I thought it would be fun for us to kind of cuddle on the couch like you would when you're watching a movie, right? And watch the game. We went to, now my kids are into football. So the kids are watching football. The kids want to go to the training camp. She's like, oh, that's fun. So she goes with the kids. She even went once by herself with the kids to get my kid an autograph for Alec Ogletree because he missed it the first time, blah, blah, blah. And she loves it now. Right. Now she's the one cursing at the television and she sometimes has to work on Sunday afternoon. So now, Andy, I have to fucking record the baseball, the football game and wait for my wife to come home before I can watch football. How am I still married, Andy? How is this going to work? And even the playoffs, my wife announced to the household, she goes, when the Vikings game starts, I'm going to be sitting on my ass. So if anybody needs anything, you can go fuck yourself.
Wait a minute. That's you. That's your job.
I'm supposed to be silently ignoring my children and not being a good father on Sunday. We all have our roles to play out.
Wearing the apron and making the nachos.
Yes, bring me cookies, you woman.
Come on. So the second marriage, I married somebody that was completely opposite of me. Nothing alike. We thought, well, opposites must attract.
Yeah, were you trying to the opposite of what happened with the first one, or it just happened that way?
It could have been subconscious or conscious.
But you weren't aware of it. That was not a conscious effort.
Right. And in the beginning, that was so much fun. Not having anything
in
common.
She's so different.
Yeah, she like country dancing. I'm not doing the watermelon crawl. Are you freaking kidding me? But I like watching her do the watermelon crawl.
Yeah, yeah. You can watch her boot scoot boogie.
Right.
You just don't want to do it.
And she was at ballet. She did ballet. I mean, it was great that she did all that stuff, and I liked watching her do it.
Right.
But then later on, we had so much not common.
Right. That there was nothing to
I hated it.
So you really had zero middle ground and it all fell apart it sounds like with an electric slide in high-heeled boots. That's what really tore it all apart. I was desperately trying. Your achy, breaky heart.
Right. Right. But she was a lot younger. She's 18 years younger than I am, the second one. And she used to wear these belly shirts and stuff like that and dress really cute. But as she got older, she became this old woman. And so I go, wait a minute. What happened to that young girl that I met that was so cute?
So it is really, truly a grass is greener. Because here's the thing. Maybe because you've been through this, you tell me what you think of this, is that I have a theory that a lot of moms in particular, think, like, especially when you have kids and your body changes, right? I think they think that the guy completely is like, just wishes that they had the 24-year-old or whatever you. But here's the thing. Even I don't think that the guy really thinks that. They might fantasize, right? Who doesn't fantasize? Just like she would fantasize about Ryan Gosling, right? Right. Or Channing Tatum,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you have that, but when confronted with the actual 18-year younger difference, it's not all peaches and cream, it sounds like. Is that what you're saying?
No, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't, so it's the same. Yeah, it doesn't change.
It didn't change much.
That's funny.
But because she actually did become the older person in the marriage.
So she wanted to just mellow out, and you were kind of like, yeah, I'm going to keep up with you kind of thing, and it... And
I just went the two extremes, right?
Yeah,
I just got to find the one in the middle, which is fine. I mean, I've dated a lot of fantastic.
Oh, that's fun. All right, let's take another quick break. And unless you have any more pet peeves, am I cutting you off?
Oh, I got tons.
Okay, we can do another one.
The only other thing is making noise when you chew. I want to kill somebody. I swear,
Did both of them do that? Or?
No, they were good enough to
Anybody.
But, kids that's, you just said pet peeve, so
that's a good one.
That's my huge pet peeve. And they know, the kids know.
I feel so horrible because I have an older stepbrother and he would constantly go, close your mouth when you chew. Like he would get so angry at me. And I remember thinking like I would just have to sit the whole dinner making sure my lips were touching because I was so afraid of like putting them out.
Lips closed.
Yes.
Damn it.
And I don't know that I was smacking like, I don't think I was doing that. I think he could just hear the noise through my cheeks. And we sat next to each other at the dinner table. Smash cut to me having my own son. I'm sitting next to him and it just.
Yeah.
Oh, my and I'm God. Like, hey. Close your mouth. And I try to be a little bit more chill about it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, I got to focus through the Benuto or whatever guy you said. I'm pretty sure I butchered that name.
Pasole, right?
Yeah, no, that was the soup. Oh. I think I combined Pasole and your psychologist and made some version of Menudo is what I did. You didn't know I was a racist.
The bubble doll experiment.
Whatever that soup you made, Jimenez.
Yeah, with that, I really find it difficult going to Asian buffets. Have you ever sat next to
Is that a thing in their culture? They just...
Oh, they're...
Really? Snackers. I've never noticed that. Well,
and I don't want to say some of my best friends are Asian because that will sound bad. But no, because I love Asian food, but it's like the... I think it's more of the Korean Vietnamese.
Really?
They love to taste their
Well, good job.
Food.
You've ruined Asian food for me now. Because next time, now I'm going to, this is the problem with me. I'm hyper alert to things. So next time I go, I'm going to be like, who's here chewing with their mouth?
All right, that's it.
Hey, lips together. Lips together.
I always sit
next to him. Yeah, I'm talking to you.
I always sit next to him, too.
I had a guy that I knew that I did improv with, and I brought him dinner, and his jaw would pop. Like, make a...
Yeah.
And I was like, I just remember going, oh, my... Oh. Like, it felt like I was raking my teeth across the chalkboard the whole time I was sitting next to him eating. Oh, that's good stuff. All right, let's take a break, and we'll do a little moment of the week.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the Week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with a Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to dadgear.com and use promo code DADPODCAST at checkout for 20% savings. Made in the USA.
So you could go first, unless you would like me to go first. That's up to you. And you could do one with each of your kids if you want, or you could do just a couple, one or a couple. That's up to you. I mean, are you familiar with Moment of the Week?
Okay. Yeah, I think you should go first.
I'll go first.
I got too many to think of.
That's good. Narrow it down. And because for me, it's stupid. I told a story a while ago about they did like a fun run at the school. It's like a fundraiser, like a jogathon we used to call it when we were kids. And we outsourced it to a company who helped us fundraise with PTA, and it was great. But they gave away a certain pledge amount. You got a little basketball hoop that you shot, and they ran out of prizes because our school did so well. And so they were waiting, and one of my kids got his basketball hoop. The other one didn't. I'm on the executive board because I'm super badass, Andy. Try not to be jealous or attracted to me. So
I've not had much luck on the other. I thought about going the other way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just want to make it clear. All right. There's all right. A line in the sand. All right. You stay on your side of the desk and I'll stay on mine. But so we're sitting there and they said, oh, your son didn't get it. We'll make sure we get it. And I said, why? And they go, well, one didn't get it. And the other one did get it. And I said, well, the one who did not get it, weirdly enough, loves basketball. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy him a full size basketball hoop. But tell him and his brother that that came from the fun run company just to mess with him a little bit. And this mom got a kick out of it. And she actually had a basketball hoop that she wasn't going to be using in her backyard. And she said, if you can get it to your house, this is yours. You can have it. And so I go to the minivan thinking, well, I'm just going to take it apart like a couple pieces, throw it in the back of the minivan, drive it the 3/4 of a mile back to my house. It wasn't that far. And so I can't take it apart, Andy. That's the only way I could see it. It's not coming apart. So now I'm dragging this thing with a slight uphill grade, 3/4 of a mile. It took me 35 minutes to drag it to the house, and then I had to walk back to get my car. So it was all told like an hour is what it told me. It took me to do this whole thing. My favorite part is there's a pretty busy street here in Burbank. I don't know if you're down in Anaheim, huh? Yeah, okay. So it's about 4 lanes of traffic that I drug. And I just love those people's day that are like driving by and they just see this guy dragging a basketball hoop across 4 lanes of traffic, not in a crosswalk. I wasn't taking it all the way to a crosswalk. Screw you. I cross the middle of the road. So I get it here. Of course, they don't touch it for a month. You know what I mean? And then one day when I'm not here, they're shooting hoops. And I bought a new net because the net had kind of fallen apart because of sun damage. But anyway, a couple weeks ago, we had... my wife had to do her open house stuff for real estate, and we were waiting to watch the Rams game. And this is more than a couple weeks ago then. Or no, we're just waiting to watch football. She wanted to watch the playoffs. That's what it was. It was a couple weeks. And so we decided to play horse in our driveway, and it was super fun. Like, it was just, you can't get more after school special than shooting horse with your kids. And what was great was the little one was kicking all of our asses. And I wish I could say that I was a good enough father, Andy, to like let him throw it a little bit. No, I was out to crush that child in horse, and I could not do it. He fair and square defeated me at 6 years old. And his older brother is really good at football and older. And so he found this thing that is his thing. And so for me, it was a moment for both of them because he won 3 of the 4 games that we played. I wish I could say that I also won 25% of those games, but no, all of it went to the kids. I'm a loser. But anyway, it was great for him because he got a charge out of beating us. And the older one who was losing didn't get upset, which is another thing I was very thankful for because, you know, he fortunate enough in his life. And now I have to create situations where he can lose so he can learn to deal with it. But I don't think he's had enough hardship. And so when those little moments like what we talked about happened, they hit him big. So he lost 3 of the 4 games. His brother got to celebrate his victory without rubbing his nose in it, but just like, I won, like that kind of thing. And nobody got upset. There was no tears. And then the icing on this cake, Andy, wife comes home as we're wrapping up the game. We're waiting for her to come home. She sees me outside playing horse with the children. That gets her ovaries ablaze.
Nice.
Yes. So now I not only do I get to share this magical moment with my kids, but I get to share an almost more magical moment with the missus later on, right after I close those fucking blinds.
So you're, yeah. almost stepped on that. So you're being good to the kids and playing with them so you can have more sex.
That's the only reason I'm in this parenting game. Is that a bad... I think she knows my reinforcement. I really think she knows. If not, I need to help her remember it.
I wish I would have figured that out. Damn it.
It's hard to translate that into French. That's a tough guttural language.
Yeah.
All right. Your turn, my friend.
All right. Well, I think the moment you said that, there's only really one thing I want to share, but it'll be set everything else up that we talked about because I teach on my Falco Canine Academy Facebook page that dogs desire leadership and they need leadership. And it's one of the things that a dog needs to have in their life. If they don't have it, then they become fearful and they become difficult dogs because they're fending for themselves, trying to figure crap out. And And they can't because they're dogs, right? In a human world.
Yeah,
right?
That makes sense.
And so children, I have come to know because of the mistakes I made with my older daughter. And now I'm really disciplined with the children, not in a...
It always sounds bad.
It's
sad, right? Yes.
I did last podcast, you said, it always sounds bad when you say you discipline your kids. No, I discipline my kids because I love them enough to do that.
We should not have to have a disclaimer.
No.
Fuck that.
No. And so, and they too, they need leadership as they're growing up from a very, at the moment they come out, right? And so there's days where I think, God, it's like I've done nothing but discipline them, yell or scream or take something away. And it's like one of those days that just feels like, God, am I doing the right thing, right? Sometimes my heart hurts because I feel like I've given them a timeout or I've taken the TV away or something and they're all walking around moping around with a big lip hanging out. My dad took my thing away or I can't go out and play. And so it's one of those days. It was about a week and a half ago that my son, we're getting ready to go to bed. We're laying on I got a big king size bed. So my oldest is the last one usually go to bed at 11 years of age. And I think on that day, I just felt like, God, I don't know if I'm divorced, you know, divorced from the mom. And I've been doing all this discipline and stuff. And I'm afraid that I'm losing touch with the kids or something. Mm-hmm. He rolls up next to me. He leans up, puts his head, an 11-year-old, on my shoulder, and he says, Dad, I love you.
Oh.
And he goes, I love you more. I can't even tell you. I love you. I can't tell you how much I love you. He goes, I would die. He says to me, I would die for you.
Wow.
And I turned to him and I said, well, I wouldn't let you die for me. Right? No. I said, I'm always going to protect you and take care of you no matter what. And he just gave me this hug and kept his head on my shoulder. And I like started crying, like I'm almost about to get ready to cry.
Yeah.
But it's those moments where I go, oh my God, you know, it is true. I mean, it's just if you are teaching them good, solid stuff, right? You're not being an asshole like that idiot in Riverside.
Oh,
that idiot
God, family, you
know, that's moronic. I mean, just if you're doing the right thing, right? There's a purpose behind everything.
It has to come from a place of love. That's what I think I've learned from my own dad is that he was really hard. He said horrible things.
Yep.
He hit me everything that in today's book, you're supposed to be in prison, right?
We have another show about how my dad raised me.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing. A segment I call Time Dad, where if you could time travel your dad into today's world, what would it be like?
I have some good stuff for you on that one.
Oh, we'll do it again next time. Oh, this is great. We're already teasing the next episode, Andy. I always knew my dad loved me and I feel the same way. Like it's funny to me and it seems so counterintuitive. I say it so many times on the show is that the nicer you are, the more you try to make them happy. It's so weird how it has the opposite effect, it seems. Yeah. And yes, you can't be a harsh jerk, you know what I mean, for the sake of being a jerk, but you can have an expectation and even have an expectation that's a little bit too harsh and learn from that and be flawed in that and be honest in how like, oh, maybe that was a little too rough, my bad on that one, you know, kind of a thing. And that yields that tremendous love. I've had arguments with my wife where she says I'm so hard on the kids that she's afraid I'm creating a barrier between us when they become teenagers. And I'm literally like, the kid's cuddling with me. If he was afraid of me, he wouldn't do that. Your kid wouldn't do that if he was genuinely afraid of your discipline, I'm putting in quotes, you know?
Because it's out of love and respect.
Right.
Right. I love them and respect them.
Right.
And I want people to respect them when they get older. And I feel that almost everything I do, I try to make sure that it has a purpose. You know, if, not having devices at the dinner table, I think on some level later on when they go to a board meeting, they say put all your devices away, it'll just become automatic to the kids. They won't even have them out. And they'll understand that when we're going to get into a meeting and have a family discussion, it's not different than having a business discussion.
And they understand that, while because I'm bad at it, to be honest, is that when my wife comes home, we have a no devices at the table kind of thing too. But I will check while my wife is talking to me. And I learned through love languages that because her love language is quality time, which means she wants me locked in. She wants me to hold her hands, like you said, and focus. But I can listen to her and I remember everything. She'll say, what did I just say? And I'll be like, oh, you talked about how you went to the store and this. And she's like, okay.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like you're listening to me.
Right. Attention.
I'll go shut the blinds and then y'all listen.
back to the damn blinds. But just back to that moment is when he said that. And I'll never forget it. It's burned into my head. But it was that affirmation, I guess it is. Mm-hmm. That confirmation that it is true. That the more that you show them the way through love and respect and discipline and boundaries and rules, that the love just becomes stronger. And notice that go back to the dog thing, since that's why I'm here, is that in general, the most dogs really get more attracted to the person who puts more discipline and obedience and that structure in their life And dogs tend to be more attracted to that person, that leader that's in the family. So
yeah, and I mean, it's like you said. I mean, I think what really ultimately all boils down to, excuse me. And why you're interested, I think, in the psychology thing is that you're really doing psychological things. There's a reason why Pavlov has dogs,
yeah,
right? And that it's because psychologically there's a similar wiring, and it's even more fundamental.
Yep.
So if you could figure out that basic teaching tool, I think you can apply it to a more complex level to your kids.
Yep.
And it can work. Thank you so much. You can find Andy at Falco K9 Academy. That's the letter K and the number 9, academy.com. That link is in the description of this episode. You can check him out at facebook.com/FalcoK9Academy there. Falco K9 Academy on Twitter. So that is the thing you got to do. Look in the description of this episode. Falco, the letter K, the number 9 Academy. And give him a like. Send him a message. Tell him how much you love the episode. He's got some Facebook Live video that you can go and check that out there too at his Facebook page. And then give me the name of your daughter's cooking show. That
Constance Cooking.
Constance Cooking. And I will put that in the description of this episode as well. You can send me an email, show@thedadpodcast.com. We broke 1,000 likes on Facebook, so I'm trying to do the same thing on Twitter and at The Dad Podcast. So we have way more listeners than that. So if you use Facebook ever, just go over to facebook.com/dadpodcast, give us another like. But if you're also on the Twitter at Dad Podcast, on Instagram, I will show you an epic slow motion shot of my son's horse shot that he kicked my ass at. I took it from behind while I watched him. And I'm not kidding. In this game, Andy, I was doing no-look shots over my head forever trying to make it. I made one. That was the only letter those asshole kids got. Ugh, worst game ever. I don't know why we play it. All right. On behalf of Andy Falco Jimenez. Oh, wait, I said it wrong.
No, that was right.
Oh, yeah?
That's perfect.
Andy Falco Jimenez. This is Justin Worship saying, hug your kids, hump your loved ones, and stay frosty, my friends.